Hi, my name is Ritendo Nyamuda, and welcome to another phenomenal, extraordinary episode of In My 20s. In My 20s, while you're here, don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. Today's guest is someone I originally met at Toastmasters, and then we would occasionally bump into each other at the gym, but he's going to be chatting about privilege. So welcoming himself onto the In My 20s podcast and into the In My 20s family, here he is.
Hi, my name is Miguel DaCosta. I'm an aspiring entrepreneur. My background's in psychology. Trying to just make a little bit of a dent in the universe.
Now, on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, my guests always come through with these incredible mind moments or gem moments. And this is just one of them.
What is the difference between white male privilege and white privilege?
I think it's just like an extra layer of privilege. Mm. If I'm a white male, I can walk on the streets and not be bothered. In a business setting, people might treat me differently. Yeah, and I see it happening.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit more about Miguel's career history. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about privilege. And finally, rounding up all three sections is a conversation on the all-consuming 20s journey. So let's get straight into it.
Miguel DaCosta isn't a South African name.
No.
So I'm assuming you are not South African or don't have South African roots.
Yeah.
But what is your story?
So I'm a Portuguese South African. Mm-hmm. So my grandparents were Portuguese, mm-hmm. all four of them. Born in Madeira, which is a little island. It's actually closer to Africa than Portugal. So mm-hmm. I'm going to claim Africa. So my parents were born here. So I'm effectively South African. Born in Boksburg. There was a guy called Vernon Kukumur that uh-huh. was like, he was on a few memes and Nando's ad.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. Funny. Yeah. Boksburg, it's not the best place.
I don't think I've actually been to Boksburg, to be honest.
Yeah.
I know Boksburg from Monopoly.
Is it a Monopoly?
Yes, it's on the Monopoly South African board. I think it's green on Monopoly.
I don't think Boksburg gets on Monopoly.
It is. It's on the South African board.
Are you sure?
I think it's on the... Anyway, continue.
Yeah, so born in Boksburg. We moved to Cape Town in 2001. Mm. I was quite young. And then I went to a really good school. Very privileged in that sense.
What school did you go to?
To Bishop's.
Okay.
Yeah, didn't take full advantage of it. Actually, in retrospect, I probably should have done a bit more. Like, there was the music and the arts and the culture and that kind of thing, which didn't really get too much into.
Okay.
But I mean, I guess it's just one of those things. Sometimes you don't take advantage of the opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then went to study at UCT. Rocky start, I must admit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I did fairly well in high school.
Yeah.
But then first year started and I was just like, freedom. And I just like lost it.
What did you study at UCT?
So I started with the BCom PBE, mm-hmm. Politics, Philosophy and Economics. Failed too many courses. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I managed to stay in UCT. Thank God. I don't even know how.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of started to get my stuff together. Less partying, more actual studying. Mm-hmm. Got into psychology, which I really loved. Mm-hmm. So moved over to psychology. And... yeah, so that was good, but I didn't really want to be a psychologist. My dad's always been in business, and yeah, I come from a generation or a family of entrepreneurs. So first generation Portuguese South Africans, they weren't that that educated. So they came here kind of, they needed to start from scratch, build up businesses, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always really liked that, you know, kind of building businesses. So entrepreneurship allows you to do all kinds of little things, which I love. Later, I also started to realize that it's also an area where you can have a lot of social impact,
mm-hmm.
Because you could kind of decide what did you want to have impact on and where,
mm-hmm.
and kind of try and make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so it went from just kind of, I like this thing, to realizing, you know, within the South African context, I have been very privileged. I have had a whole lot of advantages during my life because of my background, because of my schooling, because of my position. So I kind of wanted to do something that also gave back a little bit.
Mm. I'm going to ask an interesting question on privilege.
Yeah.
Because again, coming to the South African context, it's one thing that white people seem to struggle with a lot, to actually acknowledge that they are privileged in certain ways. without becoming so defensive about it. What is your perception on privilege?
I mean, in terms of my journey, I think like in high school, I didn't recognize privilege at all. I was completely blinded to it. You live in this little like bubble where it's just, you don't realize. Especially at the kind of like elitist school that I was at, you're kind of, all the other boys, you have this reinforcing thing where you're like, you're above everyone else. In retrospect, it's horrible. Yeah, so I never really realized it. And even coming into university, I didn't realize it either. And it was almost quite a big shock because you're going from this, I'm just going to be perfectly blunt, like very white, elitist school to suddenly like, I'm actually with people who are a different color to me. And it was weird, especially when you're in a country where that should be the norm.
Yeah. Were you friends with people of color in high school and in varsity?
Not in high school, but in varsity, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then coming back to the point around not knowing that you were privileged, but not needing to acknowledge it because it wasn't something in your psyche. A lot of people might say is, I think the tricky thing is now being, and I know your journey's completely changed to where you are now, but even one being in their 20s, sometimes even in work environments now, you're sitting with people who are 20, who are 30, who still cannot acknowledge that, or who are still like, everything is fine. The country's perfect. We're all equal. It's the Rainbow Nation.
Yeah.
But forgetting that there's been so much inequality. So at what point did you realize that, oh my gosh, actually I am privileged and there is so much inequality in this country?
I mean, I think you can have like a superficial understanding of the inequality and that kind of thing and kind of like realize it, but not really see your position in it, in a sense. You have this weird perception where it's you're privileged because your parents worked hard and that kind of thing. But I think it was a combination of formal studies. So in psychology and in our sort of politics, we kind of started to grapple around those issues. And then also around the time of FISMA's fall. So that was my final year of psychology, was when that was all happening. And then suddenly there was this discourse around that. Well, not suddenly, but maybe suddenly for me, at least. And so started to kind of grapple with these topics, started to, you know, chat to people about it, started engaging my peers, both like just immediate and just people I wouldn't usually chat to. Yeah, and I think I just started to kind of understand it a bit better.
Mm-hmm. How would you define white privilege?
I think just like an example. I think the best example is that I can walk into almost any space in South Africa. When I walked in here today into your flat, you said, the security guards let me in. Usually it's only your sisters. Why? It was probably because I'm white. It's really sad and it annoys me. But that probably is the case. And I think that's just like a prime example of it. It's like going around little spaces and just having this, people allow you to do more things, I suppose. And I think that's white privilege, and not just white, it's also white male privilege.
Hit me on that. That's interesting. What is the difference between white male privilege and white privilege?
I think it's just like an extra layer of privilege. If you're a white woman, it's definitely a lot of privilege. But white male, you've got all kinds of others. If I'm a white male, I can walk on the streets and not be bothered. In a business setting, people might treat me differently. And I see it happening. I see it happening not just with white people and white people, but also with black people and white people. So I'll see a black person might treat me differently because I'm white. And a white male,
okay.
Even to a white woman.
Mm.
And I do notice these things. I try to notice them more and more, just kind of be aware of it.
Have you ever spoken up against discrimination or unfair treatment or inequality?
In certain circumstances, yeah. Not as much as I'd like to. Yeah, like we've got a family group on WhatsApp. And then there was a family member that was basically a bit racist. I try to be as political as possible. I'm just like, it's got absolutely nothing to do with their race. It's got to do with like socioeconomic background. If you'd like to chat further about this, please message me. So I think it's quite important, especially like if you're engaging with another white person, it's not kind of just be like, that's completely wrong. What are you doing? but actually to engage them. Of course, like, say that is wrong, but to kind of say, like, I'd like to chat about this further. Let's engage, let's chat.
Yeah. And why do you feel, I mean, I guess from in your opinion, why do you feel so many white people are so offended by the fact that there is something called white privilege? Or if someone does point out racial behavior, that they're so quick to go, oh my gosh, no, it could never be me. Rainbow Nation, 1994, Nelson Mandela. Instead of actually just saying, look, this is a tough pill to swallow. Yeah. This is an issue. Let's talk about it. Or rather, this is a tough pill to swallow. I am privileged. I mean, even having this conversation with you, which was not even the discussion point of today's discussion, it's just interesting that for me as well, I grew up in a very multiracial environment. It was the same thing. I didn't know about inequality. I didn't know that I was a foreigner and that I was going to be called Amakwere Kwere until it was said to me and until it was pointed out, and that was as early as high school. So it's like these things as a child, you grow up and everything is sunshine and roses. Mm-hmm. And then adulthood hits, or pre-adulthood hits, and reality hits. You start learning things about inequality. You start learning things about history and whose perspective was history written on.
Yeah.
And on the one hand, you get so upset and so angry about it. On the other hand, it's just like, okay, what are we going to do about it? But coming back to my question about why you feel white people get so offended.
Yeah.
Around hearing conversations around privilege and not acknowledging it?
I think there are three parts. I think number one is not understanding it. So purely having not grappled with it, so you just, like, the concept seems completely foreign. So that'll apply to my parents. Strangely, more my mom than my dad. But I don't think she gets it. Mm-hmm. Like, she thinks, like, you know, you just, if you work hard, like, everyone's equal, and it obviously just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is probably getting it, but not wanting to grapple with it or acknowledge it. I suppose number three is it feels like it's a personal attack against you,
mm-hmm.
when it's actually not. It's just it's a recognition,
mm-hmm.
And people will go straight to, like, personal attack against them, and they'll try to justify it. So it'll be, oh no, but I'm white, but I come from a poor household, blah, 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 blah. And just kind of almost putting down that person's past or suffering based on your experience and suffering.
Mm-hmm. And how do you have those difficult conversations with family members?
Yeah.
Because they're your family at the end of the day. And like you're saying, it's like your mom, or it could be an uncle, or it could be your grandparents. It's like, how do you even start to have those conversations? And do you feel like their mindsets can be changed, or are they just kind of ingrained in their ways?
I pick my battles wisely.
Okay.
So I think beyond a certain age or mindset, it's a bit too late. So, like, my grandfather, for example, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
he's been indoctrinated for too many years. He's not going to change his mind. My parents, I do try to kind of engage them on that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's somebody in my generation, then, like, I definitely engage them. I don't accept any kind of, like, racism or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I just kind of, like, try to pick my battles. Because I think, like, the older generation, they kind of, not really an excuse, but I can understand why, because they have been indoctrinated.
Yeah.
It's really sad. I don't think it is an excuse, but it's kind of that thing. But anyone my generation, I think it's inexcusable.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to grapple with these topics.
There's so many layers to privilege. Mm. I know this one is specific on race, because there's also class privilege. There's also just, you know, you spoke about, like, how white men are, you know, at the top of the eco chain food system, and then white females. And then there's also, you know, we've got Asians and Indians, and to be very honest, right at the bottom are black females.
Yeah.
You know, and my sister always says it's interesting with black females, because you're fighting two battles. You're fighting the race battle, and you're fighting the gender battle.
Mm. I don't think it's the burden of the person who's the victim of racism, or even just, like, if I were to ask you, okay, you're a black female, tell me about privilege. It's not your obligation. It's mine as a white male to kind of, to figure it out.
Okay, so we've been talking about a lot about race, particularly in South Africa, but coming to culture and customs and language and immersing oneself into the language of a country, yeah. You co-founded a company called Utini.
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about the company.
So quick elevator pitch on Utini.
Mm-hmm.
Utini is a peer-to-peer language learning platform that connects people who want to speak a local South African language like Xhosa or Zulu to Xhosa or Zulu home language speaking tutors. It's all done online on a messaging platform. It's very similar to WhatsApp. And lessons are short, 15-minute sessions every few days.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we wanted to make learning a language as easy and accessible as possible, while at the same time engaging people who spoke or speak Xhosa and Zulu.
Mm-hmm. So how is your Xhosa at the moment?
It's improving. It's stalled, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
So we added all of our lessons, mm-hmm. the content we had,
mm-hmm.
And then kind of like we didn't have enough content. I was like, ah, oh, damn.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did a medical Zulu,
mm-hmm.
which was really fun.
Okay.
But yeah, I actually haven't done lessons in a few months, so I need to get back on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
And like, do you have any favorite Xhosa or Zulu phrases?
I like the word. So one of the words for like business owner or entrepreneur is mchwebi.
Mm-hmm.
So dingu mchwebi.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
And what's Zulu, it's ukunankinga, ukunlaki in Xhosa.
Mm-hmm.
That's like no problem. I love using akunlaki. I almost think it does make me cringe a little bit that I speak a little bit in Xhosa and now it's kind of like, should be like, you should be doing that anyway. Something I've struggled while I've kind of been exploring is like, and it's around race and privilege and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think a lot of people have questioned why a European or Asian civilization did seem to advance so much, like on a purely like economic basis compared to like African civilizations.
Mm.
And I think because of that, it is the root of some prejudices, or a fair amount of it, because it's people say, okay, everyone's equal, but then in the back of their mind, they're like, okay, well, why was there this big divide?
Mm.
So going back to, I think, the question earlier when you asked, like, what can we do? I think it's to try and understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of research around why that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, Jared Diamond wrote a book, Guns, Germs, and Steel, where his thesis, and it's very widely recognized, was that the reason Europe did so well was because it developed guns, it had all its gross germs, which then mm-hmm. spread around, and it had steel. So just purely because of its where it was situated, it was just lucky to develop these things.
Mm.
And there are a few other theses around that, but I think that's quite important to understand, like, why was Europe so successful, and successful in the sense of like it built these civilizations,
mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have anything to do with it being because they were inherently white Europeans. A lot to do of it is to do with just geography, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But to that point, in terms of looking at civilizations and history and all of that, it's like one of the massive things in South African and even African history is it's not told from the viewpoint, from a black person's viewpoint. Mm. It's always told by the colonizer's viewpoint.
Yeah.
So it's like, even I remember in primary school, the first thing we were taught was that Jan van Riebeck founded South Africa. That's the first thing you learned.
Yeah.
It's like, so in your mind, you're just like, okay, so was no one else before? You don't question these things as a young child. So you grow up with these beliefs that, oh, everything we're learning from history is correct. Even the way we were taught the apartheid, about apartheid in high school. Apartheid in high school made it look like, oh, there was separation. Kumbaya, Nelson Mandela was freed. We're all together.
Yeah.
They don't tell you about the atrocities. You have to go and do the research and look that up for yourself. You have to go and see how black people were really treated, how Indian people, Asian people, colored people were treated to actually know how bad it is. But that comes back to being the kind of person who's going to go and look that up? And then again, questioning our education system and going, but what are people really learning?
Yeah, I think we do have to relook at that. And yeah, just kind of try to give a, I mean, it's never really possible to give a completely balanced view, but to give a more balanced view and a more Afrocentric view.
How would you summarize your 20s?
Started off like roaring and then started to norm a bit, starting to have to pay bills and like work out how personal finance works. That's a crazy thing, personal finance.
Yeah. Do you know how to do your tax returns?
I recently started learning.
I hate it. Yeah. I always like message my sister. I'm like, it's that time of the year again. What do I do?
That's crazy.
She's like, COC now, like you're almost 30 and you can't do your tax returns.
See, they don't teach us stuff in school. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
They don't teach us. They don't teach us how to change a car tire. They don't teach us how to do our tax returns.
Don't teach us how to budget.
No, they don't. They just like go out into the world. Good luck. You're 27 at the moment. So you are like 2 years out of your quarter life crisis age, technically. Have you experienced the quarter life crisis? And if so, what was it?
Yes and no. I think you kind of, as humans, we're kind of always questioning ourselves. And like with the rise of all the social media and that kind of thing, you're always like, but that person's doing so well and that person's doing so well. But I think like I've tried to take a step back and just being like, you know, focus on you. Things are going well your side. Don't try to focus too much on other people. I suppose where did come a bit was around now when we're looking at about some potential bias for the business and just kind of like realizing it's 4 years of my life that have gone into it. And it's, you pour a lot of dedication and passion and commitment into it. And everyone always says, you know, like it's all about the learning and the journey and that kind of thing. But you still, those kind of, come back to you a little bit, but not like a hectic core life crisis. I think again it comes back to privilege. I've been really lucky to start a business really young, to have all the cushioning I had to start that business. Like people talk about encouraging entrepreneurs and that kind of thing, but when I look at like if I didn't have all the cushioning I had, I probably wouldn't have started a business. So it's kind of encourage an entrepreneurial culture. It's really difficult because like, if you're a kid in a township who if he or she doesn't pay their bills or like they've got nothing to fall back on. I've always had stuff to fall back on. So of course I can take risks. But how do you expect somebody who doesn't have anything to fall back on to take risks?
Incredible conversation. Beautiful mind moments, beautiful gem moments. But what piece of advice would you want to leave for people who are listening to this podcast?
I've heard podcasts where they ask similar things of successful people by however you measure success. And often they say, okay, I would recommend that just don't worry too much. Everything's going to be okay. But kind of at 27, I'm in the worrying phase. And it's a whole dichotomy of, okay, don't worry too much. Everything's going to be okay. But was it because they worried that everything became okay? Or was it like, just shouldn't worry? I think I stress a fair amount, but I think we all just stress so much. So it's just kind of build up ways to de-stress. So whether that be exercise, meditation, I think we're really, really fortunate in that we're kind of the first generation that's realizing what stress does to us, does to our mind, does to our body. And we're kind of trying to overcome that. So yeah, just find ways to overcome stress and just don't just chill out.
Thank you so much, Miguel, for coming onto today's show and sharing your honest thoughts and opinions on privilege. It was truly refreshing for you to talk about privilege as a white male and not be on the defense about it. For you to say, yes, as a white male, I do have privileges that other races don't necessarily have. To acknowledge that is the way we can actually take these conscious steps forward to actually tackling some of the fundamental issues in general, in life, in work. Just start having these conversations. You'd be very surprised in what might come out. And in the wise words of Pharrell Williams, the truth will set you free, but first, it might piss you off. So we will catch you same time, same place, right here on In my 20s. In my 20s. How old are you? That was higher than usual. How old are you? I am in my 20s. Bye.